Welcome to Free Fire Radio. And now, Free Fire Radio is about to commence.
Well, good morning, Reading. This is Mark Beecham sitting in for Carl and Linda Bott. Carl is taking a much-deserved mental health day, I think, as I used to call it when I was back on the clock. And I hope Carl is sleeping in, and I hope he's not listening to the radio, and I certainly hope he doesn't call us. But anyway, thanks, Carl, for giving me the seat today. On relatively short notice, I put together what I hope will be an interesting show. First hour, we're going to talk a little bit about history and business, and the second hour, we're going to get political with Bruce Ross of the Record Searchlight, who's never at a loss for an opinion. And then at 8:30, we're going to have our new mayor, Missy MacArthur, drop by, and we'll find out what's on her agenda. But first, this hour, we've got Dave Scott, who is president of the Shasta Historical Society, and also owns an accounting firm on North Market Street, and has lived in Reading for his whole life, not yet, but his whole life, pretty much, and has got some perspective on, among other things, why downtown Reading is so lame compared to downtown Red Bluff and downtown Eureka and other sites around the North State. And then at 7:30, we're going to have a guy call in, Chris Reznor, who is a young entrepreneur in Reading, who owns, I think, five or six Dutch Brothers coffee stands and is doing quite well. And we're going to try to find out from him what is so appealing about Dutch Brothers, which is almost a cult, has almost a cult following. Bob, have you ever been to Dutch Brothers?
You haven't seen my Jeep.
Oh, you haven't? So what is
I have
it
numerous
about?
I
what is it about Dutch Brothers?
Part of it is the energy, and that's a big part of their marketing. I covered the opening of, for my blog a couple of years ago, I covered the opening of the airport road at Rancho location, and I was familiar with Dutch Bros from road trips up to Grants Pass. There are several along the highway there. And it's just you get good energy out of those folks, and they serve up a pretty decent cup of coffee at a fair price. You're in and out, but they will make conversation, make eye contact, and it's just a great place to visit.
Okay, energy doesn't mean caffeine to you. It means what?
From the people, yes, okay. from the workers. They have a very solid communications. Nothing makes me crazier than to go to a drive-through and they shove the bag out the window and never, ever, one time during the transaction, make that human eye contact.
Okay, well,
that just makes me crazy.
I'm going to ask Chris when he calls in, but it seems to me that the demographics of Dutch Brothers is younger than the demographics of Starbucks. Is that your impression?
As a rule, but I do see a lot of people in our age bracket going through Dutch Bros.
All right. Okay, good. Well, anyway, we got to take a quick break here, and when we get back, we'll get into talking a little bit of Shasta County history and taxes with Dave Scott, who has an accounting firm, as I said, in Reading. And we'll talk about that when we get right back. So this is Mark Beecham sitting in for Carl and Linda, KCNR, 1460 AM. Well, welcome back, Reading. And I'm sitting in again. This is Mark Beecham for Carl and Linda Bott. They're taking a day off to recover from their big anniversary party over the weekend and to get ready for the holidays, I'm sure. Bob,
sir.
What's the weather going to be like?
Well, excuse me. Well, Mark, it looks like showers today off and on, possibly a thunderstorm. We saw a couple of those over the weekend. Today's high should be somewhere around 48 degrees. Tonight's low, 39. Currently under partly cloudy skies, 46 degrees downtown Reading.
All right.
Weather always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards.
Good. So I guess that storm that was much ballyhooed about has missed us for the most part.
Actually, down to the south in Sacramento, we were looking at the weather radar yesterday. They got hammered for a period of time, much-needed rain getting up into the foothills, but also some flooding in the Sacramento area and points south. But for the most part, the storm has skirted around us. Looking at the weather this morning, though, looks like some snow up the canyon, so if you're going to be traveling, again, take it slow and be careful.
Okay. Good deal. Well, Dave Scott of the Shasta Historical Society and also of D.H. Scott & Company on North Market Street, thank you for being here, Dave.
Good to be here, Mark.
And I've got first question for you. You told me over the last week when I came in to meet you briefly that you grew up on a farm almost in downtown Reading. And I'm assuming that a lot of people would say, well, where could that be? And it actually pretty much still exists. And tell us a little bit about that. Where is that?
Well, that's the original Thistlehorse property down on the south bank of the Sacramento across from Caldwell Park. And my parents inherited a home there just over the hill from the Caltrans building, and we ran cattle down there. However, you call it a farm, and it originally was a farm in that they grew corn and vegetables. My great aunts and uncles, Maybell and Isabel Thistlehorse, and their brother George. And so when I first moved down there, the corn was still in and the garden was. Then later, as my great aunts and uncle got too old to do that, we put cattle in there and ran about 30 head of cows. So my father thought that would keep my brother and I busy and out of trouble. So it didn't quite work out that way, but we had a good time.
I grew up in Reading, as you know, and I pronounced it Thistlehorse my whole life, so I'm wrong. Is that right?
Well, it's pronounced, the German pronunciation would be Thistlehorse, but the family pronounced it Thistlehorse.
Thistlehorse. Okay. Well, you have an interesting historical connection to the Shasta County in Reading, and I assume that inspired you to get involved at some point with the Shasta Historical Society.
It did, actually. It was sparked by a phone call from Marie Carr, who was one of the previous presidents of the Historical Society. And if you grew up in the 60s and went to Shasta High, you probably went to school with a Carr kid, and I did. Patrick was my classmate, and his mother, Marie, was president, and she recruited both me and Pat onto the board about 3 years back.
And you are now president, and you've been president for about 6 months now.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Good. Talk a little bit about the major challenges that you are facing with the Historical Society. It's a membership of about 800 people. A lot of them are, you know, people who are interested in history are kind of on in years. I imagine you're trying to get more young people involved, and you're also looking at maybe hiring some professional staff to help out.
That's correct. There's multiple issues for all nonprofits, and one, of course, is membership, fundraising. But in addition to that, at the museum, we also are a research library, so there's constant issues of collecting new items and preserving those items and then making it available to the public. And we hope to be embarking on a pretty grandiose project in the form of looking at ways to digitize our collection. And that is a very expensive process and a time-consuming process, but one we think needs to be done to make our collection more available to the public. And also, heaven forbid, if there was a fire or something like that, those documents would be lost forever. So digitization is obviously a way of preserving that for all time.
Hey, a lot of listeners might not know this, but you can come down to the Historical Society's headquarters, which is just a couple of blocks away from us here on Market Street, anytime during a weekday between the hours of, is it 10 and 4?
I believe it's 9 and 4.
9 and 4. And you don't have to be a member. You can come in, you can sit down, you can use all of the reference books and ask questions of the paid staff at the Historical Society. So it's not just for members. It's for any member of the public. And as I understand it, a lot of people who own businesses or researching property transactions, they come in and try to find out information.
That's correct. However, we are always looking to sign folks up to be members. That's one of our main sources of income.
And what does it cost to be a member? Cheap. It's cheap.
It's very cheap.
Too cheap to meter.
It's $20 for a membership, and that includes a free copy of our Covered Wagon publication, which is, well, we sell it for $10, and it's a real value.
Oh, yeah, and it's a great great Christmas gift, as well as
Absolutely.
Your annual calendar, which is a terrific terrific thing to have on the wall for the year.
That's correct, and we have those to sell. And, Mark, I appreciate the plug you gave us in the paper in your Saturday column for the the Historical Society's calendar and also for the Ono Grange calendar out in Ono, because I live in Igo and I'm a contributor to that calendar as well as this one.
I got a question. I don't mean to put you on the spot here, and maybe it won't, but we mentioned this a little bit when I saw you last week, last Friday, and that is comparing the downtowns of, say, Red Bluff and Eureka with downtown Redding. And we have a downtown that's, you know, in transition. It's coming back from a terrible experience back in the 70s. But why is our downtown so lame compared to some others?
Well, I'm not sure I used the word lame, but we have not, in my opinion, preserved a lot of the historical buildings in our community. And I mentioned to you last Friday that I just was in Red Bluff, I think, the day before, and driving a couple of blocks on the west side of Main Street in Red Bluff is just a block after block of big two-story historic buildings. And we don't have very many in Redding. We haven't done a very good job of preserving those. And, of course, when we boarded up the mall downtown, a lot of the facades of the old historic buildings were somewhat lost forever. And so I think it's imperative that we do our best to preserve what we have left.
All right. We've got to take a quick break here, but when we come back, I'll ask Dave to elaborate a little bit on that, including one building that I'm very concerned about us losing in the next year or two. So we'll be right back. KCNR 1460.
TNT Satellite, your local Dish Network provider on the web at ReddingHDTV.com.
Thank you, Bob. Mark Beecham again sitting in for Bob, not for Bob, for Carl and Linda Bott, who are hopefully still in bed, sleeping off their long weekend. Anyway, I'm here with Dave Scott, who is owns an accounting firm and is also the president of the Shasta Historical Society. And we're talking about downtown Redding and preserving older buildings, a part of our heritage. And during the break, Dave and I were talking a little bit about what he remembers of downtown growing up. And I remember it sort of a mix of old buildings and relatively new 40s and 50s buildings. And I guess we never really did have the whole blocks of old, 19th century buildings like Red Bluff had. Is that right?
That's correct. At least during my lifetime, Mark, there was kind of a mix. There's still a couple of old buildings, the old Oddfellows building and the Bank of America building downtown. But there were newer buildings that were built, I believe, in the 40s and 50s, which would include Dickers, Penney's, Woolworth, and others up and down the street.
Right. And of course, downtown is there was a mall built there in the early 70s. And it was supposed to be the coming thing. And I think our city fathers did what they thought was best. But as soon as the mall was opened, essentially, the Mount Shasta Mall opened out on off of I-5, and the rest is sort of a sad history, I'm afraid.
That's correct.
There is one building that I wanted to talk about briefly, and maybe you know a little bit of the history behind it. It's called the Dabrowski House. It's across the street from Carnegie's Deli, across Yuba Street, corner of Yuba and Oregon Streets. And it's a house that was built, as I understand it, in the 1920s, sort of craftsman style. And you'll notice if you drive past it, some tall redwood trees. Mature redwood trees have been growing for 80-odd years, I guess, now. And it is on a large parcel of land that, if plans go forward as they look like they will, well, that whole block may be leveled, and a $250 million-plus courthouse will be built there over the next few years. And my concern is that the Dabrowski House, because of its history, and could you talk a little bit about the name Dabrowski and what it might mean for our listeners?
I'll do my best, Mark. Dabrowski's, as I was growing up as a youngster, had a jewelry store, and they also sold china. And it was, at that time, passed down two or three generations, and Baird Dabrowski was the proprietor when I was young, and my folks were good friends of his, and I know I would join my mother to go there when she was buying wedding gifts of china, because that was the place to buy china that was frequently a gift at weddings. So that's pretty much the extent of my knowledge of the family, other than that they are a historic name, and I must admit that I didn't know that that was their home over there that you've made reference to until recently.
Right, and the Dabrowskis, the family, I think, originally came to Shasta County during the Gold Rush, and they had a jewelry store in on the main street of Shasta, I think. And if you go out there and take a walking tour there, you can see where it was, one of those brick buildings. So it has a long and storied history, the family does, in Redding. And the building is... if you go inside it, you can't. It's now some private offices. If you go inside it, there's some beautiful mahogany staircases and other woodwork that's really special. And I would just hate to see another bit of our history fall to the wrecking ball to make way for another huge government edifice. And I know they need a new courthouse, and I know it's a lot of money, and that's all to the good. But I know they also have to have some setback from the main street when they build that building, and perhaps they could find a way to incorporate that historic house and its trees into the design and preserve that as sort of an open plaza for workers and other people to perhaps have a little respite from work, sitting at a park bench or something like that. And I'm hopeful that perhaps the Historical Society could find its way to perhaps, at least writing a letter or something on to the powers that be, echoing that suggestion. Not to put you on the spot or anything.
Certainly not. And I haven't seen the plans, Mark, so I can't comment too much on the layout of the planned Justice Center. But, yes, it's just one of those decisions that gets made from time to time, where you're trying to preserve what's left of old Redding and not wanting to block a major construction activity and huge impact to our local economy. But there has to be a balance, and certainly the Historical Society, I'm going to bring this up at our board meeting in January and certainly do what we can to try and preserve that historic building. Okay. And those redwood trees, I might add.
Great. Before we go, and we've got a hard break here in about a minute, tell us again how people can get involved with the Historical Society. Is there a phone number, a website, that sort of thing?
There is a website, and the phone number, I can recall that better, is 243-3720. And
the website, I think, is shastahistorical.org, I believe.
I believe so.
Okay.
And
you want members from all over the place, right?
Absolutely. Okay. I think if you looked at a cross-section of our members, they would be older folks, and we're looking to add younger folks to our roster of members.
Great. Well, thanks for coming. I appreciate the input, and look forward to that letter on the Dabrowski House. So we got to go. We'll be back after the news.
Tobacco and Brew, home of Espresso Joe's and the finest walk-in humidor, Tobacco and Brew on Hilltop Drive. Now back to Mark Beecham on Free Fire Radio.
Thank you, Bob. And during this segment, from until 8 o'clock, we have got a very interesting young man, Chris Reznor, who has a coffee empire here in Redding, a budding coffee empire. He owns, I think, 5 or 6 Dutch Brothers coffee stands in Redding and Palisadro. And Chris is calling in from Medford, where he is spending some time with family, I think, over the holidays. Chris, are you with us?
I'm here.
Thank you for calling in. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
And congratulations on your success here in Redding with your coffee business.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
It's a challenging time for any business, and I know some of your competitors have, including some very well-capitalized large names like Starbucks, have had to cut back a little bit and restructure, but you seem to be doing quite well. What's the secret?
Well, I think it's definitely been a learning process for us, too, and it's been something that I think I've always looked at stuff as the glass is half full, and so... I'm looking at it as how can we use this to better ourselves. And, when we first opened, we opened in April of 2004. That was my first, business venture. And you know, so this whole thing has been a learning process, and I'm still learning. And so, you know, hitting some times like this has been good for my wife and I, and really, really teaching us to look into the books and the numbers and look where we can save money without sacrificing quality. And so I think it's been good for us, really focusing on our customers, you know, because at the end of the day, if we don't have customers, then we don't have a business. And so just really diving into our core values and making sure we're doing those to the best of our ability.
Can you explain to the listeners who haven't been to Dutch Brothers what it is about Dutch Brothers? It's almost a cult. I mean, unless I'm missing something here, you have some real diehard fans.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting. I just finished reading I think the actual name is Behind the Counter, Look at In-N-Out, and it was a great book. And reading that book, I really saw a lot of parallels between Dutch Bros and In-N-Out in just good old-fashioned business, you know, and treating people how they would like to be treated. And you know, like I said, this has been a learning process for me. And I think what sets us apart, aside from just, I mean, at the bare minimum, our prices are cheaper than everybody else in town. And I think that that matters more now to people than it used to, when people are looking where they can save a dollar here and there. And if you come through our shops every day, that ends up adding up. But I think what really sets us apart is our crew. You know, I really strive to hire kids that are personable and people that I would love to be friends with, and that truly care about other people, and you know, and they're about building relationships with our customers. And you know, you get repeat customers that come in every day and they get the same drink every day. And so we really focus on, you know, using that minute and a half to try to brighten somebody's day.
Yeah, our producer Bob is more familiar with your business than I am. So Bob, you have a comment?
Yeah, Chris, and you and I talked about this a few years ago. You can get a cup of coffee, you can get a hamburger, you can get that pretty much anywhere. And if you want to get it as cheap as possible, you've got a number of choices. But I think in our lives, we like to take a little time out and just have an experience along with our cup of coffee, along with our hamburger. And that's part of the appeal for me, is I always know that I'm going to get a smile and some good vibes back when I do the drive-thru down there at Dutch Bros. And especially in times like this, I think we need a bit more of that.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, I'm a big proponent of my own product. I mean, I come through every day. The first thing I wake up and I grab my little two-year-old boy, and that's the first place I head is I cruise down Churn Creek and hit my shop. I mean, it's the only thing I'm thinking about when I get out of bed in the morning. I want to go down and say hi to my crew. I want to get my Americano and get my blood pumping. But, you know, it is, and that's something that I've hammered into my crew over the years is, you know, you can get a decent cup of coffee anywhere. If you're just looking to get some caffeine, you can get it anywhere. I mean, there's plenty of choices in town, but to keep people coming in all the time and to really build those relationships that people are expecting with Dutch Bros, you know, it takes more than just a good cup of coffee. It takes an experience, and there's a lot that goes into that, not just building a good cup of coffee.
Chris, want to hold you through the break here, keep you until 8 o'clock hour. Is that okay?
Yeah, that works.
Okay, so hold on, and we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Mark Beecham, KCNR 1460.
Valley and the weather for northern Sacramento Valley: showers, possibly a thunderstorm, high near 47, 90% chance of precipitation throughout the day, and it'll get down to about 39 degrees tonight, currently 46 degrees in downtown Redding. Now back to Mark Beecham on Free Fire Radio.
Thank you, Bob. And we are talking to Chris Reznor, a very young and energetic entrepreneur in Redding who has a budding coffee empire with the Dutch Brothers stands. He has, I think, you have five or six, Chris?
We have five in Redding and one in Palisadro.
Okay, great. And just for the record, how old are you again?
I'm 35.
35. Well, you know, people say, where are the young people today? Well, I would point to you. You're doing a great job, and I have a question for you as a boss, okay?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I want to ask you this. You mentioned earlier about getting the blood pumping, going down to your stand in the morning with your young son, and I went to Dutch Brothers once, and I made the mistake, perhaps, of ordering something called the 911. And
shots.
I thought, honestly, I was going to end up in the ER. And I'm just kind of a simple Starbucks guy, you know. So anyway, I won't make that mistake again.
We don't use that word.
But how popular is that drink, the 911?
You know what? That drink is actually really popular. I don't think it's called this anymore on our menu, but it used to be called an ER 911.
Ooh.
And it's a 6-shot Irish cream Breve. It's actually probably in our probably the top 5 of popular drinks that we serve. It's a popular drink.
Or what's the most popular drink you serve?
Most popular drink is a Kahlua Kicker or a caramelizer, a caramel mocha.
And what's a caramel mocha, and how much does that cost you?
A caramel mocha, a small one is $2.75, and it comes with a double shot of espresso, and a medium is $3.25, and that comes with a double shot as well. And then a 20-ounce is $4, and it comes with 4 shots. And, you know, it's one of the things that kind of sets us apart, too, is we don't charge extra for syrups or sauces or using different types of milk other than soy costs a little bit extra, but... you know, there's a lot of ways you can customize drinks, and it doesn't cost you extra money, which a lot of other places, you know, you start adding different things to your drink, and it starts racking up your bill.
All right, I've got to ask you this question. When I was a kid, you know, I don't think I had a cup of coffee until I was probably 18 or 17 when I went away to college. But people today, young kids today in high school or grammar school, I guess, they're customers of yours, right?
Yeah, you know, we got a lot of parents that come in on their way taking their kids to school, and we have a lot of little guy drinks that are, you know, we have like a not so hot, which is a warmed up chocolate milk and comes in a cool little kid's cup with a bendy straw, and you know, and part of the thing too is, you know, my employees make people's children feel, you know, feel important also, and so they look forward to that experience as well, and coming in and, you know, my crew will know their names and know what's going on, know they're headed to school, and, you know, it's making people feel like they have a, you know, have another friend.
All right, if somebody in junior high came into your stand and asked for an ER 911, would you serve it to them?
We would probably just say, "You sure you know what you're drinking here, and you know it's got a lot of espresso in it, and most of the time, you know, these kids are they're well aware of what's going on, and half the time they're with their parents."
All right, because when I was a kid, you know, the old saw was, you know, you can't have coffee, it'll stunt your growth. And you've probably heard that, but I mean, I don't see a whole lot of midgets walking around, so I'm sure that was just an old wives' tale. But back to you as a boss, tell us a little bit about your business philosophy.
Well, you know, I'm not... And you could ask any of my employees this. I'm not a screamer and a yeller, and I don't come in and get super ticked off at people. You know, I kind of have always felt that that leading by example is probably the biggest thing you can do as a boss to really get your crew to follow in your footsteps and to believe in your vision. And I think I got a lot of that from my dad. And like I told Bob, I'm actually sitting in my dad's truck right now out in the forest, and he's a builder, and he's cleaning up this house that he's building right now, and so I drug me to work with him this morning to help him clean up. But you know, I think I got a lot of that from him. My dad's a little more quiet than me, but he, you know, he definitely leads by example, and he works hard, and I've seen that with my employees. You can, you know, you can drill into their heads over and over what you want them to do or what to clean or do this or do that, but if you're not doing it yourself, then it really doesn't sink in like it does when they can see you there in the trenches doing the same thing as them. And I think that's probably the biggest thing to me that has been something that I've learned.
And I also understand that you have a bit of a, you treat your employees as much as possible like extended family. I understand you have them over to your house for barbecues, play games, etc. Is that right?
Oh yeah, yeah. We, you know, and that's another thing that was a little learning curve for me. You know, when I first opened my first shop, I got told from numerous guys that had been in business for a while. They're like, "Oh, the one thing you got to learn is you can't be friends with your employees. And I think the thing that I've learned is that if I have people working for me that I can't be friends with, then I probably have the wrong people working for me. And so when I'm hiring, or when my managers are looking for people to hire, you know, we're looking for genuine people that we would like to be friends with. And more often than not, my wife and I become good friends with them. And so we do view our crew. We just had our Christmas party last week, and, you know, we had all of our crew we went to La Conquista Mexican restaurant. We had about 80 people there, and, you know, it was great, and our crew loves it, and we all get together and fairly regularly, not as much as I'd like, but, you know, we'll have everybody over to the house, and we'll just send a text out to our whole crew and invite, you know, whoever wants to come over, and we'll play Pictionary or just hang out, and I think it makes, for a better work environment. I mean, our crew is close with each other. There's people that become friends with each other that never would have thought they would be friends with each other, and they may not have a whole lot in common other than they have a genuine heart and that they do care about people, and, you know, and having that common thread, you know, we end up all getting along and having a good time together.
We got to take another break. Hold on until afterwards, and we'll finish up the hour with you. It's great talking to you. This is Mark.
Yeah, you too.
This is Mark Beecham with Bob Belongi, and sitting in for Carl Lindebaugh on KCNR 1460.
This Barbershop Radio brought to you by the Cypress Square Barbershop, man's last stronghold. Good haircuts, that's what you'll get at Cypress Square Barbershop. Now back to Mark Beecham.
Thank you, Bob. And during this half hour, we are talking to Chris Reznor, who is the owner, he and his wife are the owner of six Dutch Brothers stands in Redding and Palisadro. Chris, just for the record, Dutch Brothers is a franchise, right, or a chain?
Correct. It's a franchise that was started out of Grants Pass, Oregon by two brothers who happen to be Dutch. And, that's how I started. I started with working for them up in Medford and, back about 14 years ago or so. And,
oh, wow.
And then, you know, had the opportunity to to open some myself.
Great. And you've got over 50 employees now, is that right?
Yeah, we have right around 50 employees, and, you know, we just actually hired four more the other day and finishing training those people up, and so we're still hiring and providing some jobs.
So when you hire somebody, what are you looking for? Can you give us like two or three characteristic traits you're looking for in people?
Yeah, you know, that's what I get asked a lot, how we hire, how we train, all those sorts of questions. And you know, we've been very blessed over the years to not have to really advertise, you know, for hiring or for jobs or really go out and look for people. We get about 15 resumes a day or so between all the shops, and most of them are from customers that come in that see it as a place that would be a fun job to have. And so we usually hire from within, from our own customer base that knows the whole routine. But we also tell people when they come in, you know, if they're coming in asking for a job or for an application, you know, we tell everybody we just do resumes, but we also tell people to be creative. I mean, we do get a lot of resumes, and so if you want to stand out, you know, be creative and tell us why you want the job. It's not so much that we look at somebody's resume a whole lot. We don't look to see, you know, what kind of background they have or a whole lot of that. We really just look at the person and carry on a little bit of a conversation with them, ask them what they're doing, what some of their goals are, excuse me, and, you know, what their outlook on life is, and you can get a pretty good read on somebody if you're talking to them for, you know, 5 minutes or so on where their priorities are and if they seem like somebody that would fit in. And not all the time does that hiring style work, but I would say that we have a pretty good track record so far.
Hey, Bob, you had a thought?
Yeah, I saw something the other day that really impressed me, Chris. I was doing a drive-thru, and the young lady, these espresso machines, they look like something in Mission Control. You could launch the shuttle with this thing. And she made the cup of espresso, and she tossed that and made another one and tossed that, and she... and I said, what's going on? And she said, well, it has to be between certain number of seconds to be a good cup, and if it's not, we toss it and we try again because it didn't get a good press. And yeah. I thought, that is really something, because most places that were, you know, just absolutely bottom line and didn't care would say, all right, that's close enough, and move on to the next thing. But she got it right, and I think that consistency and that attention to detail is part of what sets you guys apart.
Definitely. And you know, and something that I like to tell our crew, too, is that there's magic in the details. I mean, if you're not worried about the details and you're not looking at details, then your final outcome is going to be way off. And it's something, I mean, even, you know, referring it to construction, you know, my dad has taught me over the years, you know, when you're framing and you're doing the foundation, if anything's off, if you're off, you know, a quarter inch in the foundation, by the time you get to the roof, you could be off, you know, several inches, which can throw the whole thing off and things won't work. And so it's the same sort of thing. I mean, when you're pulling a shot of espresso, if it's not perfect, then, you know, you can have the right amount of syrup, you can steam the milk to the perfect temperature and have the perfect amount of, you know, froth on it and all that stuff, but if your shot's burned, you know, the whole drink's going to be messed up, and, you know, it's going to be a waste of time.
What, Chris, interest in full disclosure here, I understand that you are going to be featured in an upcoming Record Searchlight publication highlighting 20 young people under the age of 40 who have made a real contribution locally. So congratulations for that.
Thank you.
What kind of advice would you give other young people who are hoping to make a difference in business or in their communities?
Well, I think it's getting tougher and tougher. You know, I came in 2004, and it was really tough for me, but things are getting tougher and tougher, and I really think that it takes a lot of drive and a lot of persistence and willing to, you know, take a gamble and take a risk and not take no for an answer. I mean, you can imagine when I moved to Reading in 2003, I believe is when I moved to town, you know, telling people what I was doing, and I was friends with a lot of people that worked at Starbucks and a couple of the managers actually from some of the Starbucks, and when they heard what my goals were, you know, you can imagine some of the looks that I got. They're like, you're going to open a coffee shop here? And I said, yeah, and I'm not only going to open one, I'm going to open several of them. And, you know, I got so many weird looks, so many no's, especially from banks when I was trying to borrow money. And,
right.
Chris, not to knock on any banks, because I'm friends with a lot of people at the banks now. But
right, Chris, we've got to wrap it up here. But I want to thank you again for joining us this morning, and good luck with your future endeavors.
Thank you, I appreciate that, Mark.
All right, we'll be right back with Bruce Ross of the Record Searchlight after the news.
KCNR, Shasta Redding. KCNR Radio.
Good morning, Reading. Mark Beecham here, sitting in for Carl and Linda Bott, who are taking some much-needed mental health day, I guess, not days. I'm not doing this tomorrow. And hope they're still in bed or just getting up, and I hope they're not listening to the radio. And, Carl, you better not call in, because I don't want you to be working or even thinking about this job on your day off. And congratulations on your year with KCNR. It's been quite a roller coaster ride, and you guys deserve a heck of a lot of credit for taking a risk during the worst economy in generations to start this. And I understand we've got a caller on line one, Elizabeth from the Tea Party. Could you give us a very brief idea of what's going on tonight?
I will, Mark. Good morning. Just a real quick mention of the Reading Tea Party meeting tonight at Bonneview Baptist Church. As always, it's 6 o'clock, and it's real simple tonight. We're just going to have kind of a Christmas social, a great time for people to network and get to know each other. And I want to give a quick plug to our radio program on Sunday mornings, We the People, from 8 to 9 o'clock.
Hey, Elizabeth, before you go,
yes.
Quick question for you. I mean, you had the big election on November 2nd. Have you noticed
yes.
any drop-off or diminution in enthusiasm since that election?
You know, we really haven't, Mark, because I would say that over the last couple of years, people have become very savvy about how politics really work, and they understand that just because we put people in office doesn't mean that we can walk away. It's like an employer hiring a new employee. You don't stop paying attention to what they're doing once you hire them. So there is not a lack of enthusiasm at all, and there's a lot of things coming up that our folks are really excited about getting involved in. So no lack of enthusiasm. We're still ready to go. We know there's another big election coming up in 2012.
Okay, good deal. Well, thank you for calling in.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. Again, during this segment until 8:30, we have got Bruce Ross, who is the editorial page editor of the Record Searchlight and one of the smartest guys I know in town. Never at a loss for an opinion, and always willing to drop by on short notice, which he did, thankfully. But before I get into this, Bruce, I want to say I love your blog at Reading.com, one of the most eclectic blogs that I visit. But I wanted to ask, what websites do you typically visit? I mean, what are your favorite websites to get some of your interesting items?
Good morning, Mark. Is this mean it's time for me to wake up?
Yes.
All right.
Fetch Brothers.
You know, what do I read? Little of everything. You know, the stuff somebody asked me this just the other day. Is the internet, like, suddenly catching on that people are... What do you read? But, you know, I love...
What's in your favorites?
In my favorites, you know, I love to keep up on California news, especially, and kind of regional news. rtumble.com. Rough and Tumble is sort of a political, I think one of the original California political aggregators, and they surf the news from, every paper and every, a lot of new websites that are popping up that are, they're great. Calitics, which is a crazy liberal website, and Flash Report, which is a great conservative website, all focused on California. There's some great newsy kind of websites. You know, calwatchdog.com is a real interesting new website. Steve Greenhut, who was here sometime within the past year talking about his book, I think Chamber of Commerce brought up, you know, sort of a news opinion organization run by him under the aegis of the
Pacific
Legal Institute. Or the Pacific.
Yeah.
Anyway, sort of a libertarian-oriented website. And then there's... California Watch, which is a great nonprofit sort of investigative reporting. They do all kinds of very interesting stories. So, I don't know. Boy, that's just without even crossing the Sierra Nevada, so.
All right, we got to take a quick break here, but when we come back, I'm going to try to pin Bruce down as to his own personal political philosophy, whether he is a Democrat, conservative, liberal, libertarian, whatever. I'm sure he'll squirm out of that. But anyway, we'll be back after this news break. KCNR 1460.
KCNR 1460, the weather going to be showery today. Possibly some thunderstorms. Look for a high around 50 degrees. Tonight's low going to be 39. And right now, 46 degrees. Downtown weather always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. Now back to Mark Beecham.
Thank you, Bob. And we're here during this segment with Bruce Ross, who's the editorial page editor of the Record Searchlight. And before the break, I was trying to get Bruce to perhaps reveal a little bit about his own political leanings. And he told me during the break, which is public record, so I'm not spilling anything here, that he is a Republican, although he described himself as perhaps, maybe a rhino. Of course, a rhino is kind of a...
I'm a rhino.
Okay. It's kind of a... not a nice thing to say, but anyway, you're all right. You're not a real Republican necessarily.
I think I wanted to vote in a primary back in the day when you had to be registered. Now you don't, of course.
That's
so
okay. So you might change.
In a measure that we endorse at the Record Searchlight. So
very good, very good. All right, I want to ask you about a pet peeve I've got: light bulbs. And you editorialized a couple days ago in favor of these new energy efficient, mercury laden, very expensive, long-lived light bulbs.
Well, they're not expensive over the lifetime, and that's why...
Upfront costs. Why are you on board with these things? I mean, because this is what I want for Christmas out there. All I want for Christmas is incandescent bulbs. I want to have an entire garage...
Stock up, Mark. I'll buy a box.
Please do.
Well, you know, we are in favor of better light bulbs. We're not necessarily, I mean, the way they go about it, you know, the Energy Commission or Congress coming in and just banning a particular bulb, I think is heavy-handed and really not the way that I'd go about it if I were in charge. Ultimately, though, I think they are better technologies that have developed. You're rolling your eyes. Mark is not a fan of the hue and tone
they're
of the
just,
light.
They're dim. Are these? Is this a? Oh, it's a new ball.
We have a mixed bag in here.
All right.
If I may interject briefly, CFLs are considered a transitional technology between the incandescent bulb, which we've known and loved for more than a century, and the newer solid-state LED lamps and electroluminescent technology, which is, remember when we were in high school, what a calculator cost? Okay. Same thing's going to happen with lighting devices.
Going to come down in price.
Yes.
Okay.
So it's a matter of mass production.
And in fact, they already have. I mean, I noticed this the other day. I was at Home Depot, and I was just running past, and I saw an end cap. They had headlamps, three for, I think, $15. And now this is, you think, who the heck cares about headlamps? You know, little, unless you're a caver. But in fact, they're
headlamps.
Yeah, you put it on. It's got those straps. And, you know, if you want to go out into the garden and get pick a tomato at night, or if you want to take the trash out, or if you want to, you know, go jogging, or if you're underneath a sink trying to fix a pipe.
If you want to read a book under one of these new bulbs, you're going to need a headlamp. They are so dim. That's my beef about them. They're unbelievable. I mean, it takes 5 minutes for them to turn on, and then when they turn on, it's like, 20 watts.
Have you bought one recently?
No, I get it free. I get it free from REU.
You know, the free ones that they give away, I think you're getting what you pay for. Oh. And sometimes if you get the ones that are, I bought some I was down at IKEA years ago, and I bought like a 12-pack of the worst bulbs ever because they were cheap. And I was like, ooh, cheap light bulbs, great. And they are. They're dim. They're kind of bad. But the newer ones I get are actually great.
And what does it cost you to buy one of these great new bulbs?
You know, they can be...
$5, $6.
Bendy. They're definitely more than a regular incandescent, but they do last a pretty long time. I mean, there are some that we were talking about this off the air. There's some that I'd love to change out in my house.
But you can't.
But I can't because, I'm not going to just change out a bulb just because I don't like it anymore. But it'll burn out eventually.
If you do change it out, what do you do with it? I mean, you have to, call a guy in a white suit to come pick it up?
Only if they break. And even then, not. I mean, and I think that's...
Over there.
You know, not that mercury is good for you. You know, mercury vapors in your house. Open the window, air it out. How many light bulbs do you actually break?
Well, you've broken light bulbs in your life, right? Haven't you?
Actually, the last time I remember breaking a light bulb was an incandescent when I squirted it with a squirt gun when I was like 14. And they pop. They burst into a million pieces if you hit them with a squirt gun because they're so hot. My toddler broke a light bulb that she got a hold of in the garage because I have a bucket in the garage where I keep the old light bulbs until I make it.
Okay, she broke... an incandescent bulb.
But it was out in the yard. And, yeah. So, I mean, the problem for me was, having them sitting around with the 20-month-old, which is kind of a...
But if she had broken one of these newfangled bulbs...
No, this wasn't a new one. I mean, but it was actually outside, but she picked it up and...
The actual amount of mercury is quite minimal. But it's not a good thing. You shouldn't go around inhaling it, nor should you vacuum it up if you break it. Uh-huh. But... it is not quite as... It's the truth is somewhere in the middle, as is the case with many things.
Well, Bob is an early adopter here, and I guess Bruce is too.
I tell you, though, I
hate these bulbs.
I popped $12 for a compact fluorescent three-way bulb, and it was great, but it stopped working. Like, I unscrewed it and screwed it back in while I was fixing the lamp, and it stopped doing the three-way thing, so I'm kind of ticked about that, because that was... You know, three-ways are nice, but that, it goes up to what's supposedly the equivalent of 150-watt bulb. And it's
all right.
Bright.
So you're
but now I saw, I have a friend, an old colleague of ours who used to work at the paper, who's now at UC Davis. She works for she's the writer for the newsletter of the Lighting Technology Institute or something like that at UC Davis. She says she found the perfect light bulb because she's got, she's a woman and she's a little sensitive about light tones and whatnot. But she found that what for her was the perfect bulb, and it was an LED with the perfect light tone, $45. And I think that's that's a lot of money for a light bulb.
Oh, okay. We got to take a break while I absorb this $45 bulb. And when we come back, we got a caller, Ed on line one, who I'm sure is going to weigh in on this this whole energy and bulb efficiency. So anyway, we'll be back in a second. Mark Beecham, KCNR 1460.
Portion of the program brought to you by B&T Satellite, your local dish network provider on the web at readinghdtv.com. That's B&T Satellite. Now back to Mark Beecham on KCNR.
Thank you, Bob. And we're back here talking with Bruce Ross about well, at this point, electric light bulbs are the newfangled electric light bulbs. And we've got a caller, Ed, on line one. Ed?
Good morning.
Good morning. What do you have to say about all this?
Well, you're probably going to shock you, but I also plan to stock up on incandescent bulbs.
Excellent. Well, you're going to have to beat me to Costco.
No, well, I don't know. I'll probably hit them at the 99-cent store, you know. But I don't know. You pretty much covered the bulb story there, but, I mean, the only thing I'd like to add is incandescent bulbs are really great for heating. So I feel nothing wrong with, on a cold morning, going in and turning on some incandescent light bulbs, you know. And for places you only use the heat occasionally, you only need light occasionally, they're much cheaper. I wouldn't worry too much about the mercury. Like, I don't know who made the comment, but the mercury that the coal plants put in the environment is of such a greater order than the amount in those light bulbs. If you break one. If you break one, yeah, you should wipe it up with a damp towel and put it in a plastic bag. And I've only broken one once, and I recycle my oil down at the, you know, Reading automotive oil down at Reading Recyclers, and they take them down there, you know, the transfer station.
Okay.
I want to give a plug, though. Oddly enough, I don't know if it was just I listened to your show online, but there was a commercial just a few minutes ago for a company that sells geothermal heat pumps. And for someone who lives in Reading, the order of magnitude of money and power you'll save by having an effective, efficient heating and cooling system is 1,000 times what you're going to save by changing your light bulbs to, you know, one way or another. So I was kind of glad to hear that advertised. First time I'd heard that on the radio.
Well, good.
Yep. Now, a geothermal heat pump will cost you a little more than a $6 light bulb.
Yeah, it will, but I told you I've had one 15 years, and it's been a great investment.
Did you have it built into your house yet?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And I rarely use it. In fact, I'm pretty, you know, the ultimate Luddite here in terms of in the winter, I got a wood fire. I heat with wood, and I would encourage people who have access to wood or pellet stoves. That's probably, in my opinion, the most environmentally beneficial and cheapest way to heat your home. But I use it a lot for air conditioning, and it's dramatically cheaper than the air-to-air heat exchanger air conditioners.
Great. Well, Ed, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Hey, good luck. Hey, you guys here? Mark, are you here this week or just
today? No. As far as I know, I'm just here today.
Ah, okay. Well, take care of both of you.
All right. Happy holidays.
Take care.
You too.
All right.
Merry Christmas, if I can say that.
All right.
Absolutely.
You can.
Bye.
Okay, Bruce, in our last couple seconds, or minutes, I should say, what can we expect from our new governor, Jerry Brown? I mean, doom and gloom, huh? I mean, are we going to see, like, tuition riots
here?
Have
you seen Jerry Brown smiling?
He's kind of
a
dour
man.
It's like
a
pirate flag.
He's got this kind of, you know, like, slightly sour tone he's bringing. I think he's deserving. I mean, you know, he said... well, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger said, "Oh, we're going to cut the crazy spending," and he never really did. They have, in fairness, I think that the state government has the past 2 years, as the economy has given them little choice, they've cut spending a lot, really, but not nearly as much as they would need to bring some kind of long term balance. And they have no choice; all their tricks have kind of run out. And Jerry Brown's been very straightforward. He said, you know, it ain't his problem. He didn't make it, but he's gonna
clean it up.
He's gonna
try to clean it up.
I think he said, when you see my budget in January, sit down.
What do you expect? I mean, are we gonna have really? Is he gonna really be able to tame spending and tame the unions and do all that stuff?
Well, no, but he'll probably make some progress.
Okay, and what does that mean? What does his progress mean for Shasta County and the city of Reading, our finances?
The city of Reading, well, you know, I think you'll see it just, you know, in a lot of small ways is kind of how these things trickle out. It's like all of a sudden, you know, at the college you go to sign up for a class and, oh, that class isn't there because they dropped six sections and they all filled up 2 weeks ago, you know, or your high school student doesn't have the class. I know this happened to one of our babysitters. She had to go out to class out in the college, her English class out of the college because the, you know, Shasta High School stopped offering it. You know, all these little things that sort of the streets will be a little dustier.
More pothole.
a little more pothole.
Death of a thousand.
You know, everybody always, you know, the governor will come out, oh, we're going to eliminate CalWORKs or some kind of dramatic things. You rarely see any kind of just direct amputation of a whole program, but
just a gradual erosion of so-called services.
Well, you know, and at the Reading Police Department, I know that Chief Hansen has probably in other cities, same thing, gotten a lot of grants for you know, hiring an officer to do this or that, and that sort of helped them keep their staffing up, even as the city's revenues are down. Mm-hmm. Well, those are going to be going away. Can't really count on those next year, the year after that. So. Mm.
All right, switching gears slightly, what can we expect from the city council? We have Missy MacArthur coming in about 6 minutes.
Oh, well, and ask her.
Maybe you'll stick around and ask her a question or two. But what do you see this new city council doing, if anything? I mean, the problems still remain. They're going to have to really start negotiating with you know, the unions.
I don't think the city council changed. Did it? I mean, well, no. In all seriousness, you know, Mary Stiegel left, and Francie right. Sullivan won her seat. And, you know, I wouldn't say they're the same person, but their political philosophies are roughly aligned. And I don't see that, to the extent that the city's had this sort of running labor problem, well, the same majority is still the same majority, so.
Okay.
We'll see what happens. Sometimes you have to just sort of say, okay, maybe we'll just have to work it out now because we're stuck together for the next 4 years. You know, when there's an election and you think you can throw the people out maybe and win a vote in your favor, then it changes the way you negotiate, and now you're stuck with them maybe.
All right. Well, as I said, Missy MacArthur will be in here after the news.
Missy can tell you.
And Missy will, I hope, tell us a little bit about what's on her agenda and whether there's going to be a new or different tone from the dais this coming year. And we'll find out from her. And until then, let's see, Bob, how much time do I have left? We got to go. We got to go for a hard news break. So we'll be back right after this. This is Mark Beecham sitting in for Carl and Linda Bott on Free Fire Radio, 1460 AM.
Brought to you by Tobacco and Brew, home of Espresso Joe's and the finest walk-in humidor in Reading. Tobacco and Brew on Hilltop Drive. Now, Mark Beecham on Free Fire Radio.
Thank you, Bob, and good morning, Reading. I'm sitting in for Carl and Linda, who are taking a day off and recovering from their holiday party and getting ready for Christmas, etc. They'll be back tomorrow, I'm told. And I'm here with our new mayor, Missy MacArthur, who's dropped by to give us a sense of what's on her agenda. And Missy very graciously answered an email I sent her last week, and I included it in my column on Saturday. And it was maybe not real strong on specifics, but it sounded a little bit like there's going to be a new tone of cooperation and bon ami and kumbaya from the dais in the coming year. Am I reading too much into that?
You know, I hope you're absolutely right.
Marvel.
I'm looking forward to everybody pulling together and working together as a team and done with the partisan politics, and let's move forward together because we're a great community and we can kind of overcome many of the obstacles in our way, like the economic downturn.
All right, we've still got the same problems, though, which is you know, lack of revenue coming in. I noticed over the summer quarter, I guess, sales tax receipts were down by 3% or something like that, below what they had hoped for.
That's true. And actually, we do have somebody in the hopper. We're hoping to snag a new person a company for Stillwater. I can keep you posted on that later.
In addition to the Southern Aluminum Finishing.
Yes. It's in the early stages, so I can't talk about it other than to say, gee whiz, maybe we're going to pull another one out in this economic
climate. Well, that would be good news.
Yeah, it would be. I want to say good morning to Bruce and to Trudy and to our engineer over here.
Bob Belongi. Bruce, do you have a question for our new mayor? Not to put you on the spot.
Is Bob going to turn on my microphone? Thank you, Bob.
You know, Missy, here's a question for you. You know, there's been talk about, from a couple different city councilors over the past year, but most recently Pat Jones kind of brought it up again about having a charter city and maybe having some kind of stronger mayor system. Now, as the new mayor, do you think what can you actually do? Okay, you're the mayor, you run the meetings, you sign proclamations or letters that get written probably by the city manager's office.
Well, that's true, Bruce. But also as the new mayor, for instance, I did get a call from one of our U.S. senators about this potential Stillwater, and so you get the contact. So, but as far as power, do you have extra power? There isn't more power. You're still one voice of five, which I believe is great. It's democracy. I need to be convinced that a charter idea would be better than a general city like we have. So we'll just see how it plays out. I want to hear the pros and cons, and I've not heard those yet.
Sure. Well, that was my question. What do you think when they say, oh, the mayor of Reading, you get calls from senators out of the blue.
That's true. But on the other hand, you besides that, you do the ribbon cuttings a lot and come to speak as the mayor and the voice and the presence for the citizens of Reading for that year. And then we turn the gavel over, and with equality, we give that to the next person who gets to do the same.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned in the email you sent to me, which I published, I think, without editing in the paper on Saturday, that you were going to create some kind of a kitchen cabinet, I described it, maybe?
Yes.
How is that going to work out, and who do you expect, or who would you like to see on that?
Actually, I've already contacted a few people that have said they would do that. I emailed Erin Ryan last night from the Patriots, and she agreed that she would be on that cabinet. I have Mike Ashby from the EDC representing business interests, Judy Salter representing Parks and Museum, Emily Young, who, as you know, Bruce, does columns for your paper. She's kind of a financial wizard. And Arch Pugh, who is twice mayor of Reading and knows how governments work and what can and cannot be done. So those are the people so far.
And those are people that you are looking to give you some kind of input, perspective, ideas?
Absolutely. Okay. They definitely have their own individual and different voices. And I want to hear what they say, what their perspective is, and maybe lead from their perspectives if there's a majority kind of voice between the cabinet members.
You know, I think it was the most recent city council meeting, the council approved two back-to-back rate increases for REU, and I understand certainly, Bruce and I have talked about this, the rationale behind it, which is that we lost this cheap hydropower contract in the early part of this century, and you know, it's just the reality. We're going to have to face much higher rates. But are you getting a lot of feedback from people in the community, especially advocates for seniors or low-income people, for us to try to do more to help people as well as businesses that might be struggling with these higher rates?
Sure, we're getting some feedback from those folks, and it's really unfortunate that to keep our REU sound, we needed to do that. It's tough in bad economic times to, as I said at the council meeting, add salt to the wounds of those citizens that are already struggling.
Is there any way, and I'm assuming the answer is no, but is there any way we could perhaps lobby to get back some of this hydropower, or is that just gone? I mean, the Bureau of Reclamation, I assume, has just taken that and distributed it among other consumers, and we don't have...
Well, actually, Bruce and I discussed this the other day, I believe.
If you should happen to be on the phone with a senator.
It's all about the fish.
What's up with that? I mean, is the hydropower just gone, period, full stop,
well,
end of
story?
The
discussion that I had with Bruce, I believe, was that I was told that because we don't have the voting power up here, but we do have the water and the dams, that the voting power of the state legislature has said, let's not make hydropower part of AB 32, which is the whole environmental legislation. And I'm getting the wind it up sign. I can finish
okay,
this
we'll
come back.
Okay, we'll take a quick break, and we'll be back talking more about REU and hydropower, et cetera. And this is Mark Beecham with KCNR Radio 1460 AM.
A call. KCNR 1460.
And quick look at the weather. Going to be showers, possibly a thunderstorm today. The high should be right around 49 degrees tonight. Low 39, currently 46 downtown. Weather always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. Now back to Mark Beecham on KCNR 1460.
Thank you, Bob. And we're here during this segment. Bruce Ross and I are talking to Missy MacArthur, our new mayor. And Missy, in the past year or 2 years you've been on the council, there have been a number of rather crucial votes where you've been sort of in the middle, the swing vote. And you mentioned at the top of the segment that you were hoping that there might be a, you know, perhaps a more kumbaya, you know, feeling at the council to get things done, a little bit less partisan rancor, et cetera. Do you see yourself perhaps aligning with some others on the council as opposed to the folks you've been aligned with in the past 2 years?
Well, I think if you actually look at the alignment, as you're calling it, you'd see that things shift. There are times when, for instance, Mr. Dickerson and Mr. Jones vote together. There are times when Mr. Bassetti and Ms. Stegall and myself vote together. It mixes up. Now, what you're referring to is some of the contract negotiation type things that we've had, which has been not very fun to deal with, I must say. And I think that all of that is starting to work itself out in a very positive way.
And
we're starting to work together and less acrimony, and I think that everybody is starting to realize that this community can pull together and work together. And whether it's, you know, a financial give and take or not, we can figure it out.
Okay. Well, it was a really difficult partisan election, and you've seen a lot of elections given your experience here in Reading, and I certainly can't remember one that was quite as ugly in some respects.
Yeah, and I think there's still some wounds there. I sense that because three of the council members campaigned against one another, basically, that, you know, they're still kind of getting their feet on the ground again and trying to let it go, because I'm sure that on the campaign trail there were things said that you have to forgive and forget and move on.
What specifically would you like to see accomplished during your year as mayor?
You know, I would like to see us land some more revenue-generating industry here. I think we should continue with our bike and trail system that we have. I think it's great. I think it's a way to bring people to our North State, and they will discover us and find that this is a great place to be, and maybe they'll bring their business along with them, which will generate revenue, which will put more cops on the beat and potholes to be filled, and et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. Well, sort of on the revenue-generating side of the sheet here.
I know you're a business person.
I would ask this question, and I asked it during the campaign of Mayor Jones and Ken Murray and maybe Francie Sullivan. I didn't have a chance to ask it of you. If the McConnell Foundation were to put together an offer for the land underneath the convention center and the rodeo grounds that was a sizable amount of money, which could help, you know, with the city's budget, would you entertain it?
I will always look and listen at every offer and every item that comes before me. I won't prejudge it. I'll try to keep an open mind and listen to both sides. My general sense is, I do think that the convention center is an amenity that our community utilizes. There is no venue that is as large as the convention center, so that in itself makes it special. It's also a very nice green space as you come into our city, and it's very picturesque. So I would have to look at what would be offered in exchange, another green space, something, you know, equal. But generally speaking, I really like the convention center. It is costing us money, and that's hard numbers and facts, and that's something we're going to be continuing to look at through this next year.
Do you have a sense that an offer like that might be forthcoming?
I don't. I've not heard anything along those lines.
Okay. Bruce, you have a thought on that?
whether an offer is forthcoming, I don't know. Ask Lee Salter.
Okay, I will. What do you think the prospects are for negotiating meaningful pension and benefit reforms with these key unions during your time? I mean, you see some movement there? I mean, they clearly got a result that they didn't necessarily expect or want from the electorate on November 2nd. So, okay, now it's time to deal with it. So do you see some coming together there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that we're both sides, that would be the council and the unions, are making concessions in our thinking to work together and pull together.
Okay, we got to take a quick break here, I've just been told. So we'll come back after this break with more with Missy MacArthur, our new mayor, 1460 KCNR.
Square Barbershop, man's last stronghold. Good haircuts, that's what you'll get. Cypress Square Barbershop. Now back to Mark Beecham. One more time on Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460.
Thank you very much, Bob. And we're here with Bruce Ross and Missy MacArthur during the last segment here. And Missy, I want to ask you, you know, you're mayor, and it's a ceremonial job, granted, but it's, you know, you were interested in getting into local politics. You grew up here your whole life, and you got, you know, into politics. You were elected to the council 2 years ago. You're mayor now, and what does it feel like to be mayor of your hometown, and what does it feel like to have to tell people no every time they come up to you on the street asking for something because of the, you know, economic realities here?
Well, I actually don't get a lot of questions where I have to say no. I think people, if you talk to people, they sort of understand the economic realities. They're living through it, or they have a brother who's living through it in a very grim way. So I don't get a lot of questions that...
So people aren't asking for stuff anymore, basically, right? Like
they
might
realize,
have been four
they realize
or 5 years
there
ago.
Is no money. So, yeah, no, that's not... As far as being mayor and being very proud to represent my community, of course, growing up here, and my mom was a teacher here, and my dad was a contractor here, and seeing the town grow from 10,000, 12,000 to... over 90,000, it's pretty special.
A lot of changes. I've been home here, coming on 7 years, I guess, now, after living away for 30 years. And even during those 7 years, I've noticed a lot of changes. One of the more troubling changes is the amount of crime that I see. And a lot of people picked up for drugs or failure to appear, booked in and out of jail, a revolving door at the jail. Does this trouble you? And I'm sure it does. What, if anything, can the city do, given the financial constraints that it's in, to address these issues of crime and the jail?
You know, I've actually spoken with Assemblyman Nielsen about some of the issues associated with crime and jails and in our community and how it affects us. And he, as you probably know, was very involved in the whole prison state system as a legislator in the past. So he has a passion for that. And we're looking at it. We don't have any answers right now. I share your concerns. Unfortunately, of course, having less money for less police is a bit of the grim reality more, but hopefully we'll be able to solve some of these problems. I think some of the issues associated with what we're doing with drug offenders, for instance, the adult offenders program that Judge Beatty heads up, mm-hmm. is very successful, and if we could use that, the Shasta County model for the state, I think we could see some turnarounds in recidivism that is occurring with some of these drug offenders.
Because what concerns me is you have people who are, you know, picked up repeatedly, 4, 5, 6 times a year for burglary or drug possession or petty crimes, whatever, and they're booked into the jail, released immediately on their own recognizance, and they go back to committing similar crimes. And the police and sheriff, Chief Hansen and Sheriff Posenko will say, look, we can't do anything.
Right.
I think that's an unacceptable answer.
But the question is, are we curing the problem, the fact that these people are repeat offenders? And there isn't room in the jail for necessarily the violent people, the rapists, the murderers. I mean, we're not laying murders out, but right. The more violent type crimes, because we have these drug offenders. And putting drug offenders in and then repeat them, and not have them have a program like we do with the adult offenders is not solving the problem. It's like putting a smoker in jail and saying, okay, you're in trouble because you smoked. And then you let them out. Are they going to stop smoking? No, they're going to light up again. So the drug offenders are doing that because they aren't getting cured. They aren't getting the problem dealt with while they're incarcerated.
Right. Okay, we've got only a minute left, I'm afraid. Is there anything you want to leave the listeners with? What kind of, again, you're looking at your year in office here. Is there anything you want to... Anything you need help on, you want to get people to help you with?
You know, some of the names that I mentioned for the cabinet, if people have questions or concerns, contact those people. They'll be coming to me. Contact me through the city of Reading.
How do people reach you with email?
The city clerk
whatever?
Will, at the city of Reading will get me their phone numbers, their emails, and if they have some information that they want shared or discussed or a problem solved or looked at, give us a call and we'll work on it.
All right, well, good luck in your year.
Thank you.
And thanks for coming by. And again, Bruce, thanks for being here. And Bob Belongi, our producer, thank you for being so professional. And we've got a couple seconds left. This is Mark Beecham, KCNR Radio.
KCNR Shasta Reading.
Talk to you.